Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, it's your boy Core DJ Hershey, he in the ATL, and you know what, who else got that finesse out there, the one and only, Candace and Shelly.
Hi, you are tuned in to the Just Say with Candace and Shelly radio show. How are you? How's your weekend been? How's your evening? You enjoying your Saturday? I sure am. I was really excited about tonight's show because it's a segment that I like to do. It's called Smoothing Out with Candace. And because my co-host Shelly, she's out in California, San Diego somewhere, and she's working behind the scenes. Got a lot of stuff going on during these times. So I'm going to go ahead and spearhead the call tonight and the show. So what I'm going to do is, I don't know if you remember my callers that's been following the show. I have a book series, a book club, where I celebrate a certain book that I've reading that I'm reading and that I want to share with you. Well, this book here is one of my professors. My summer term, I took a in Florida. It's a long story, but we got time. I'll just give you like a super fast story. But anyway, I took a super fast summer college, some courses in college in Miami, since I was going to be in Miami for the summer. So I was like, well, you know, let me just go to school and take some classes, right? So I took this class. I had to finish up for my degree, and it was my professor had a book. He has a book, and it's titled Completing the Will, An Adventure in Creativity and Life. And the author's name is Warren Dittmore. So I'm going to be reading, I guess, the third chapter, which I think is so powerful because the title of this chapter is called Fire and Iron. Okay? So no one knows with fire, I think of diamonds. I think of, you know, we have to put a diamond in the fire and it has to go through that heating process to emulsify so it can become stronger, it can become more crystal-like, shiny, and that's the emulsification process of a diamond. And fire and iron, so this is chapter 3. I also have a segment today. He will be calling in. His name is Clifton Pierce, and he ran for mayor in Chicago, didn't make it, but he did endorse the mayor now, Miss Lori Lightfoot. So that's good. So he's going to be calling later on this evening, and we're going to see him to see what he's been noticing, what's been going on in Chicago during the riots and the protests. What's his thoughts on George Floyd, the death, and so forth, and just to get to know him and see what he's working on and stuff like that. Also, while I'm at it, I can just tell you, I also want you to tune in to, we have some great lineup of shows coming up. We're bringing back the attorney, Don H. Williams, to the show, and he'll be back on, he'll be back on Monday, this Monday the 15th, and it's a follow-up from our prior conversation, honoring and remembering George Floyd and the trial. In that particular interview, he dissected the footage piece by piece from the police officers and gave us a very in-depth, deep look into each frame, which was awesome. So he's coming back on the air, and we'll be inviting Mr. James Cannon from the Nick Cannon Foundation on the air as well. Now, on the 28th, we will be debuting Michelle Gorga. Michelle Gorga is an artist from Naples, Florida, and she is unique in the fact that her art is used for healing, and it's very creative, which I'm really into anything that has to deal with us tapping into our inner child, which this book that I'm going to read tonight talks about in Chapter 2, Our Inner Child. And she will be back on the show the 28th of this month, which would be on a Sunday. And then from that, we are going to be introducing this wonderful company from out of London. It's called Modair, and it's collagen. Now, this is falls in line with the health and fitness, Passport to Fitness segment. And, I mean, their products are really off the chain, if I could say that. They're really off the hook. And we're going to be Zooming in with them via Zoom and also with the Blog Talk Radio. We're going to connect that somehow. We'll figure out how to do that. But they're out in London, so I think that's going to be a great show. And we can talk about collagen, the benefits of collagen. And, you know, I didn't know, you know, collagen is basically the glue. Without collagen, you know, what I'm hearing is that it glues everything together. And so that's really important. So, yeah, we will be having the ladies and representatives and specialists from Modair from London zooming in with us very soon. So, having said all that, I'm going to go ahead and get into our reading. Now, let's see the reading part. So I said I was going to read from Chapter 3. I'm a woman of my word and integrity. So let's go ahead and I'll do the whole book. It's so juicy. It's so good. So I'm glad that we have time to go through it. So anyway, let's go. So it's Fire and Iron, Chapter 3. You can hear my dog in the back. She's really encouraging me to go ahead and finish or start reading. Okay. Fire has a mesmerizing effect on us. To gaze into the fire is to drift off into some hidden world where reverie overcomes the moment and we see pictures of past experiences dancing as ancient people used to dance. When a sound or a voice suddenly intrudes, we realize we have not been present for a while. To hide our startledness, we smile and try to respond with some meaningful expression. However, we have been caught, and there is certain sadness to the movement of time. In that mesmerizing glimpse, we became aware of the forces that moved us, except that we saw this as a transgression and not as a window into our history, our stories, our creativity, and our souls. It is fire that binds metals together. It is the fire of reverie that binds our memories together and ignites our creative expression so that we can overcome the iron nature of logic and our locked rigidity of thought that releases our creativity. Capturing our wandering minds does. To the extent that we learn from it and allow reverie to stay fired for a while, the only way to escape the rigidity of our expected thoughts is to sharpen our awareness and our transgressing ones and favor those to build on in a new direction. I remember once waiting in a living room. This is Warren Dittmore, which is the author of the book, before we went out and unexpectedly being interested in some bamboo plants growing from a vase of water. They reached out in circular movement toward a high ceiling. I suddenly thought that I would like to draw them. It was a ridiculous thought, but I got a piece of paper and pencil and did it to the best of my limited ability. I still have the drawing. It represents a move in a new direction. It symbolizes the power of a thought that I would have normally discarded, but which in this instance gave me a vision of something else I could do. It was another way of expressing a moment without losing it, perhaps forever. This was my second drawing since childhood. I became aware of how much the comfort of the room and that person had come to mean to me in that isolated expression. I look back at times and I'm grateful that to do what I would normally have rejected. In the reverie of the drawing, I found a meaning that I could easily have missed. You do not want to miss these moments of spontaneous innovation and expansion. Sometimes a dream fragment can catch our attention and send us to an unknown area of our brain to momentarily drift and wander. It is important to use those moments and record them in some way so that they can help us to more firmly encourage our creativity. In dreams, we are already dealing with a symbolism that reaches into the very core of human imagination. Do not neglect this rich source of material. Even if you feel that you never dream, start the practice of preparing for a dream thread. It may not be available right away, but with the expectation, it will suddenly appear one morning to your delighted surprise. Dreams will awaken your intrigue with puzzles and whodunits. For example, how is it that the girlfriend of his wife was able to kill marry his wife during a time and so forth and so forth, and that's how it goes. A dream fragment with its twists and turns can leave us guessing for a long time. Dreams can be such an interesting entry for your journal. I remember waking up not long ago, retaining a fragment of a dream. I was following someone, and she suddenly disappeared ahead of me. I tried to catch up, but she was nowhere to be seen. As I came over the crest of a very high hill, I could not see her or anyone, and the incline was very steep. You know how dreams are. I suddenly slipped and started sliding toward an opening, which would plunge me down hundreds of feet. I just barely caught a foothold along a jutting rock. I was not able to grab onto anything else so I could pull myself away from the deadly opening. Thank God, since I had just been about to go over to the edge into empty space. In the days that followed, I thought about who the woman might be, why did she leave me, how could she leave, and so forth and so forth. Did this have any meaning in my life? What matters is not necessarily the answers to the questions, but just the play of it all. Playing with the different meanings can come to a greater understanding of the forces within you, as well as exploring your creative nature, is essential to the process. This can be one of the most effective ways of developing your imagination and expanding your creativity. We all get stuck at one point or another with how to engage and develop our creativeness. With practice, this investigation into your dreams can lead you into new discoveries, as well as expand a part of yourself that often lies dormant. Reflect on your dreams and bridge an important gap between imagination and reality. All right. You know, Rain is such a wonderful inducer for reverie, for wandering without bounds. A good storm has all the elements essential for drifting in thought, the splashing of rain hitting into things, including its own puddles, so there is this slapping noise along with intermittent thunder. Loud, sudden thunder always brings me back to childhood. there are times I can smell the wet grass and dirt just as I did when I was a kid, the clean smell of air drenched in sweet rainwater. Pelham Bay Park in the Bronx was a place my father would take me so that we could do something together. We'd play catch or tag or just walk. I hated just walking, but with two fixed guns strapped to my waist, I could at least beat the bad guys, you know? Anyway, one Saturday morning after the rain, my dad gave me a box kite as a surprise. We weren't sure if it was going to fly since everything was so wet. However, there was a concrete skating with steps and feet that I used to love running up and down. We decided we should go to the top of the stadium and run with it there since it was already higher in the sky and not as wet. Well, my dad tried for about 10 minutes or so, running back and forth, hoping to get it to lift and catch some wind. There was hardly a breeze, so my dad gave up. I asked if I could do it. He smiled and said that I could try, but I could not get it to fly. I might not be able to as well. Okay. Fire and water transform each other. Our memories and dreams transform us as well. They can act to inspire, to calm, to inflame, or to soothe us. We feel ourselves drawn to these elements because they enliven us. They bring us back to our essential nature. We come from a swarming mass of nutrients and water, you see. We reach out of our ancient beginnings to engage in the rituals of fire so that we can produce energy and creativity. As soon as we no longer engage in these forces, we begin to decline in spirit and in energy. We begin to lounge too long. Sometimes we accept too easily the changes of life and give in to the loneliness of repetitive days. We become iron-like, inflexible, and lacking in regenerative spirit. The importance of creativity cannot be overemphasized. We begin to leave ourselves when we lose the creative spirit. All right, now we get to the good stuff. Which is why it is so important to stir the ashes of memory and pull the liquidity of reverie so that we can maintain our energy and our desire to look forward to our intriguing future where it all comes together. When we see how difficult people's lives are sometimes, it is obvious that concentration on the present can be liberating. I learned that this is really good, and I really listen to this. This will help us during these times, you know, to get through trying times like this, where your mind and our minds can be just overly exposed, too much information, and anxiety sets in, and don't know what to do. And this is these are some tools that will help you. I learned a long time ago during the ropes course to focus on where I was going rather than looking down from where I was, which was 40 feet off the ground. Creating a different future comes out of using the natural forces that are part of our nature to continue reaching and bending with the storms. Fire our imagination. We lift ourselves like the box kite out of our limitations and begin to move in a new direction, delightfully moving into a healthy future. All right. I'm going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back. guess what? I'm not going to believe this. Well, you will. But, you know, it's my guest, he's in Chicago. So it's 6:21 out there. And then, you know, they're like an hour. We're an hour ahead where I'm at. So it's 6:21. He's scheduled to be on the show around 7 tonight. So really early. Let's see if we can get him to call in sooner than later. So hold tight. Segment is smoothing out with Candace, you know, Saturday night, weekend kind of vibe, just kind of taking it nice and easy. There's a lot going on out there with the protesting and the protesting and what else? The court cases and the trials and all just all the coronavirus and the reopening, just a lot compounded at once right now. And not to mention, in addition to the energy that's out there too, the mixed energy and the talks and things like that. So I like to take it, you know, kind of smoothing out on Saturday night with you. Now, if you're just tuning into the show, I was reading from the book Completing the Will, An Adventure into Creativity and Life by Warren Dittmore, one of my university professors. So we read part of chapter 3, which was on Tired, Fire, and Iron, and I think it was so relevant with what's going on, and we can use these tools in this book. I recommend, you know, I don't work for them. I don't get any proceeds from promoting any of these things, any of these books or any of the people that I bring on the show. It's just completely from love. I'm doing all this from the goodness of my heart and my passion and You know, this is my way of tapping into my creativity. So I'm practicing what I'm preaching. And I do find it satisfying by doing this. So, this is what my creativity, of one form of my create, looks like. This is what it looks like, the radio show. And in the process, you know, I get to meet a lot of cool behind people. I get to talk to a lot of interesting people and collaborate and brainstorm and learn a lot of things. And I'm just so thankful for this platform to be able to give access to people like myself, the access and the platform to express what's on their hearts. We have, if you're mad, if you're happy, if you're whatever, just call in, just say it. You know what I mean? That's just, he said it, she said it, we just say it. You know, if this is a safe space to share what's on your heart and do it like that. So, you know, I do want to briefly about what's going on my part of town. And right now I am in sunny South Florida. I have been here since the pandemic. Didn't move, have not traveled. Quite frankly, I've been too scared and to travel. And I've been here waiting it out and, you know, staying safe. So, yeah. In that, though, the killing of George Floyd just added just a whole nother dynamic to what we're dealing with, Corona, COVID-19. I don't know if this was frustration. I mean, we all know it was negligence, and it was my opinion after looking at the footage and studying it. I mean, it was murder. It was murder. I'm going to go on a limb and say it could even be first-degree murder. And I know in order to prove first-degree murder, one would have to prove that it was premeditated. And so I thought about that. I'm like, well, okay, premeditation. He had his knee on George's neck for 8 minutes and about 38 seconds, give or take, thinking, when does premeditation, when can we argue and all agree on at what point Do you start meditating on something that you're doing? He definitely looked like he was meditating to me. You know, having his knee on that guy, on George Floyd's neck, I mean, I think after a minute, it becomes premeditate. It becomes meditation. You've already thought about it. It wasn't a split second, you know, you shoot someone, oops, you know, by mistake in the heat of the moment. Okay, fine. You can say that that was premeditated. But I definitely think, hold up, just got some news coming in of our special guest calling in from Chicago. We're having, I think he'll get it together. And call back or whatever. But yeah, so that was very disturbing and it was traumatic for the whole world to kind of view that. All right, listen, I am going to go ahead and bring on our special guest. We got Clifton, Mr. Clifton Pierce. Let's see, from Chicago. Just chimed in. We want to everybody welcome our guest from Chicago who's just chiming in to the show. And you hear all the cheering and stuff going on for you. Clifton, welcome to the show. You are tuned in live to the Just Say It with Candace smoothing out session with the Nick Cannon Foundation. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine, young lady. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for asking. So, yeah, I'm glad we got a chance to connect tonight. What time is it out there? I just realized that the time difference, you know, because where I'm at, it's 7:30 p.m.
6:30.
It's 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you being able to call in at short notice. I know we had you scheduled for 7:30.
Right.
So welcome to the show, sir. Why don't you when we talked earlier, we were talking about Chicago, and we were talking about the riots. Your point of view of what you saw. tell us a little about yourself. I heard that you ran for mayor. Is that true?
I ran for alderman.
Okay.
Alderman, that's city council. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the Woodlawn area, that's the area where I live also. That's where Obama lives. His house is about half a mile from mine. Mm-hmm. It's called
Woodlawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me begin by Woodlawn. That's where the University of Chicago is, one of the most prominent universities in the world. Matter of fact, that's where the atomic bomb was discovered. And we're in the Lakeside area. We're multiracial. The bottom line, first thing I want to say, Chicago is not the picture that's being portrayed on the media and things of that nature. Chicago is one gorgeous, one beautiful city. And even though we have the nickname the second city, we are the number one city. You have an opportunity to grow and invest here in this city, either through real estate or politics or sports. You know, this is home of Michael Jordan, Walter Payton, Gordie Howe. We can go on and on with, you know, just what Chicago is. But we had a very bad situation happen here 2 weeks ago, and that was that riot. And it was devastating to the south side of Chicago, where most of black people live.
Mm. Now, you said South Side Chicago. How much devastation or protesting do you see? Any buildings? Are they boarded up there?
Well, what happened is that you know, this was so strategic because no one could have done what they've done without it being planned on. All of our grocery stores got knocked out on the south side. I mean, all of them. Grocery stores, Walmart, Jewel, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy. Those were planned, especially when you look and see that those very same things were happening in other cities. Like, it was an orchestrated situation. And not only that, but they're painting Black Lives Matter with spray cans. And in Chicago, you can't even buy spray paint.
Why is that? Why can't you buy spray cans in Chicago?
Well, back in the day, I would say maybe 10 years from now, under the stewardship of Rahm Emanuel, who was the mayor, we had a big graffiti problem. You know, the young people were spraying and painting graffiti on everything, and they passed a city council ordinance where in the Chicago, not just Chicago, Illinois, the spray can can't be sold. So that was another indication that these people who actually started these riots came from other cities and other states. To give you an example, our Gold Coast, that's where all our top Gucci and all these for our stores are, our high-grade stores in downtown. And they were marching down there peacefully, a couple of thousand people. And then all of a sudden, it looked like a new segment of people came in, and that's when the rioting began. And the second night of that rioting, the mayor lifted up our bridges. We have bridges that the ships have to come in, you know, to put their boats on the dock. So we have bridges that have to be lifted. So she lifted the bridges so that the looters couldn't get back downtown Chicago. And that's when they turned their attention to the south side of Chicago. And that's where we were left unprotected, to be honest.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so how many people you think, give or take, were outsiders from non-residents of Chicago that were there protesting.
I would say a real good percentage of them. I would say a real good percentage of them. You know, it's one thing to throw the rock and then step back and tell everybody, come on, you didn't step back. And I saw that happening so many times, you know. And to be honest, right now, okay, they broke into banks. They stole the ATM machines. Those are federal crimes. And lo and behold, it was announced today on Facebook that the FBI is now in the city watching all these people, because so many of them posted it on Facebook, that that they're now just watching Facebook and going after these people. And they got a real problem. They're going to have a real problem. Anything over $500 is a felony. So if you bought it, or if you bought it, or even if you stole it, you're going to have a real legal problem on your hand. And I'm really feeling sorry for that. But one of the most important factors to me is that I'm watching these people out here rioting and sweating and hollering on each other and don't have no mask on. I'm looking for this virus to just spiral in the next 2 weeks. And judging by the age of them, a lot of them probably live at home with their parents. So they're going to go home and take this virus back home to their parents. And you're going to see a big influx of COVID-19, I believe, in the next coming weeks. And that's my biggest fear.
Wow. So there's no protest. The protesters were not wearing masks.
To a large degree, they were. You know, a large degree, they were. Every day, they wasn't. You know, it's taking a while for a lot of these people to even believe that this thing is happening. Okay, until you lose somebody in your family. A lot of them, it's hard for these young people to right through here now to believe what they're hearing on television. Donald Trump has put it in their head about this fake news, and he's absolutely right. You know, they only want to cover what can sell. You know, so a lot of these young people just don't believe that they can catch this virus, and so a lot of them are not wearing masks. It's just that simple.
Well, then, yeah, because they do believe there are a lot of conspiracy theories about the coronavirus. Now, do you know personally of anyone that has, has had the COVID or has passed away from the COVID-19?
Let's not begin. First of all, I'm what they call a stepper. You know, I ran nightclubs for 40 years. I ran all the top nightclubs on the South Side. So I'm pretty well known. And therefore, I'm also a stepper. I don't know if you know about stepping or not, but it's a dance that came out of Chicago
I stepped in Chicago.
Oh, God. Oh,
I did some stepping.
Oh, God.
Right off of LaSalle. Right off of LaSalle Road in a club, and I had a Chicago hot dog, and I did some stepping.
Oh, boy. You're going to show me a video of that. I see it as believing. But in actuality, we're 10,000 strong. Most steppers are between the age of 40 to 70 years of age, and we're 10,000 strong. And one of the things that I have been trying to get across to my stepping community is that we should become more active in the political arena. We should have more to say so about who and what happens in our community. I ran for alderman. First of all, I ran because I wanted people to say that you can do anything you want to do. Okay, I got all the way there, and I would just want to prove a point that you can do what you want to do. Don't let somebody tell you what you can't do. My glass is always half full. It's never half empty. You know, and if they look and see a guy like me, the lifestyle that I live, nightclubs I ran and everything, he got the audacity to want to be a political arena. And as it turns out right now, I'm really one of the power brokers in this city of Chicago. And basically because I got the people's ear. You know, I got the people's ear. I got the street people's ear. And I got the politician's ear. I even have the mayor's ear, you know. And one of our problems is that she's working with a lot of people that's just not familiar with the city of Chicago. You cannot bring somebody in from another state and think he can do it the Chicago way, because we got our own way of doing things. And like she brought in the police superintendent from Dallas. Well, Dallas is not Chicago. Welcome to the major league. Dallas is triple league. Chicago is major league. And another thing, you know, we've got 13,000 strong police officers here, and a lot of them feel like that commander and that superintendent should have came out of their ranks instead of being brought in. All of these things is coming into play as we speak.
Well, how do you feel about, speaking of the police, how do you, what are your thoughts on defunding or dismantling
well,
the police department?
Well, we need,
and
we
maybe
need,
having like a pageant so the community
we
can
need
choose.
We need the police.
I don't think
we need the police.
Uh-huh.
We need the police. That's not even an issue. The police department is very much needed. Now, I'm starting to hear about what kind of money they're being given, along with the fact that these police departments are being given military weaponry, from airplanes to tanks to machine guns. So just how much money do they need? And what I would like to say is that they maybe need an oversight committee rather than the mayor appointing all these situations, that may need an oversight. Now, she proposed this week that police officers are going to have to get a license just like everybody else. Do some background check on them. You know, can they handle this? Me being in a nightclub business, I can tell when a guy got a gun on him because he walked different, he talked different. Okay, I mean, you walk in the room and his coat is hanging too far on the right, he's got a bottle or a gun in that coat pocket. I got to go up and defuse him. I got to tell him to take that gun back to his car. I got to tell him take that whiskey back to his car. Don't come in here with that. And so therefore, you have to know how to do this. I can't fight every night. And I've been in the business 40 years. I've never had to fight anyone. I never had to call the police because you have to be in the business. You have to know how to talk to people because they know how to find you. You don't know how to find them. You can't have nobody mad at you, and you don't know where he live and what he looks like. So diplomacy is very important, yeah, very much so.
I do believe that, you know, the police chief or any police officers, they should be from the community. They shouldn't be outsourced or flown in if they're, you know, from a different state or a different county, for that matter.
Well,
I
what
think
I
they
understand,
need to be in the community.
What I understand just recently, I don't know how true it is, but the governor of Florida, by the way, the city in Florida, was telling all these police officers that if you got fired from your job in a discrimination type thing, come to Florida, we'll hire you. You know, a police officer track record, it should go with him wherever he's going.
Yeah, I briefly had a glance of that. I haven't studied it. I don't know how true that is, but that definitely wouldn't serve the community of Miami, because Miami is a melting pot with so many different personalities, and so it takes a special person to police Miami. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You listen, you fight fire with fire. You can't come in there with a suit on and talking to people with blue jeans on. It don't work like that. It don't work like that.
Yeah.
Now, one of the most powerful situations we got in the city of Chicago, believe it or not, is that the policeman's union. They call a lot of big shots, okay? And the police union, they're getting ready to do another bargain on the contract and everything, and right now, it's almost hard to fire a police officer. It's almost hard to fire a police officer because of the union and the bargain agreement that they have, you know. But let me give you an example. We have an area in Chicago called Inglewood. Inglewood is probably 80 or 90% black. But at the same time, 80 or 90% of the police officers over there are white. Something wrong with that picture. Okay. And these boys have degrees. These boys on the force, they have degrees. Some of them have degrees in science, literature, the whole nine yards. But they're not hiring them. You can get hired as a Chicago police officer at $70,000 a year. And with overtime, you can make $100,000 in a year's time of being on the job. So our police officers pay real well. And I think we're 13,000 to 15,000 strong. But they need to be vetted way better than what they're doing.
Wow. Oh, man, that's interesting. You know what? This is good. This is good talk. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
What's up? This is your boy, Core DJ Hershey. He in the ATL. And you know what? Who else got that finesse out there? The one and only Candace and Shelly.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
What's up, it's your boy Core DJ Hershey. He in the ATL, and you know what? Who else got that finesse out there? The one and only, Candace and Shelly.
We are a nation of consumers. You know, we buy the best of everything, but we manufacture nothing. And it's a proven fact that the death of a black business is the death of the owner of a black business is usually the death of the business, because the kids don't want to put the work in that they put in to make it happen. Saucing products end up giving us Soul Train. I could just go on. I could go on and on. Ed Gardner with his hair product, one of the largest hair conglomerates in the world, and end up kids didn't want to handle it, so they go back into the corporate world. These are the things that I'm saying. We have to start teaching our children to go to school to learn how to create a business, not go to school trying to get a job. You know, so that's one of my things that I would like to talk more about. Vocational training is something that we definitely need.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's very important. I think right now with everything that's going on in the world, the black community, African American community, has so much leverage right now, more leverage than you've ever had.
Well, right now we are at a very different. I don't care who's running for what office. You got to have the black vote to win. We in a very powerful situation right through here. We do. We can tilt the scale on this. And speaking of that, when Joe Biden, who's running for the presidency, he needs a real strong vice president. Okay, it's real important that he chooses a real strong vice president, and it don't have to be no woman, and it don't have to be no black woman. Now, if I had my choice, I love Jim Clyburn down there, because had he not endorsed him, Biden might not even be in the race. And I think Biden and Clyburn would be a great ticket. And Clyburn is recognized and respected in the House over there, in the Congress. So I would think he would be a great running mate for him, because he's going to need a real strong vice presidential candidate. Don't think that this is a walk in the park for him. And one of the things I want to say to Joe Biden, you're not running against Donald Trump. You're running against voter apathy. What are you going to do to motivate these people to go and vote? You know, people make their mouths say anything, but when the fight starts, where are they? You're standing there by yourself. So I'm saying he's got to have a great orator. He got to really shake hands with these people, and he got to have somebody out front that's looking and talking. And just I'll give you a prime example. At this stage of the election, he has no office here in Illinois or Chicago. Don't take the black vote for granted, Mr. Biden. Don't do that. You'll be making a very bad mistake. And it's not that we're going to vote for Trump, but they're just not going to vote, period.
Yeah. I think that'll be a travesty if we don't vote, because the leverage that we have right now, just with the protests, this is unprecedented. Protesting around the world, and it's not just African American people that are protesting. You got Germans, got Chinese.
Listen, this young fella fulfilled his prophecy, the DeVore George. That's what he came to do. God sent him to die under the knee of a white police officer. That was his mission in life. Not to be a club bouncer, not to be a ball player, and not to be this. He came and changed the world. Just like his little daughter said, my dad has changed the world. You got the Pope talking about that. You got Europeans, Germans talking about this. You got blacks and whites, and everybody's talking about this. Yeah, he came to change the world. And this time it's not going to just go away. It's not going to go away. It's going to be an impact. It is time for a change. It is time for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And the children mm-hmm. shall lead. You know, one of the things that we elders forget to do is stand in the back over the shoulders and tell them which way to go. Yeah, that's our job, to counsel them. Yeah. You know, I have a dog, a very ferocious dog. And if he starts barking when somebody come up the stairs, my job is not to tell him to be quiet. That's his job, is to bark. But what I got to do is train him when to bark. Am I making sense to you?
Yes.
Well, that's
yes.
what I would like.
That's
I, but one more thing I want to say. We just lost a gentleman here, Dr. Conrad World, okay? I had rented the DuSable Museum, which is one of the most iconic black buildings in the city of Chicago. It's named after a black man, Jean Point DuSable, who discovered Chicago. And it's a black museum, and I had rented it for the NBA All-Star game that was coming to Chicago. I'm going to make me some money. And I was going to give an NBA All-Star game party, you know, get some of the ball players to come by. And I woke up that morning, I said, wait a minute, you have a building that's iconically black. You have it on February, which is Black History Month. I said, you need to honor someone that's black over some ball player. And I chose Dr. Conrad World. Dr. Conrad World is known all over the world. He's a freedom fighter. He taught at Eastern University. I mean, I could just go on and on about his credentials and everything. But one of the most important things was he was very instrumental in the election of our first mayor of Chicago, Harold Washington. He was very instrumental in that. And so, therefore, I gave the party for him on Valentine's Day. I honored him. And I gave him what I call the Yes, I Can Award. And that name, Yes, I Can, I got that from Sammy Davis Jr., a book that I read when I was about 12 years old. Sammy Davis Jr. wrote a book called Yes, I Can, meaning that when I look at my glass is half full, not half empty. And that if you say you can, you can. And don't be around people who will tell you that you can't. And so that was a very inspirational book to me, and I used it all through life. You know, I ran nightclubs with 300 or 400 people in them and never had to call the police because you run a business from your front door. If you keep the bullshit out the club, you don't have to worry about putting it out because you're greeting it at the door. All those kind of things. Then you got to stay in your position. If you're the boss, you got to look like the boss. You got to talk like the boss. You got to carry yourself like the boss. So the bottom line here, these boys right now, I feel like there's a big problem going on because I think there's a feminization of black men. They go into prison. These ball players with this hair hanging all out from under a helmet with these funny-looking clothes and stuff on. These boys are walking with their pants down. That's not the right. That's not how we look. A black man is always taking pride, but he's going to emulate what he sees. So we have to become more responsible. You never saw Michael Jordan out of his uniform. If he didn't have on his NBA Bulls uniform, he had a certain tie on. You couldn't interview him while he was sweating. You saw him, he got his suit on, he got his certain tie on. We have to start teaching our young men how to look. And to give you an example, if I tell a guy he can't come in my club with gym shoes on, he's way less inclined to want a humbug. He got his best Sunday clothes on. You don't want to get them tore up and dirty and everything. So all that comes into play. You got to be a mental manager when you run in businesses and when you are in a political arena. And you can't do it for the money because it's not going to happen like that. You got to do it because you care about people. And that's why I'm at this stage of the game. You know, one of our biggest assets in the country, one of our biggest assets in the country is our senior citizens. And I see our black senior citizens today, they're retired and they're still young people and they got money and they got these skills that are just being gone to waste because we're not taking advantage of them as who they were and what kind of occupation they had. And so we can mentor these young people and everything. It's very important. Very important. I want to tell these black women, I know you and the guy don't go along, don't get along no more, but don't keep that man out of that boy's life. It's a natural order for a boy to want to gravitate to a man. You can be a great mother. You can be a great provider, but you're not the man in that boy's life. And I'm telling you, that's very important. That's very important.
Wow.
I got so many guys, 40, 50 years old, that call me dad and call me uncle, and they mean it when they say that to me, because they want to say that to somebody. And when I got young guys that willing to, you know how many guns I had to walk up on in a nightclub, and when the police get their ass over, I got to handle it before something happens, okay? And they may have a problem. Well, I say, hey, man, Bo, you go over there and sit down. You go over there and sit down. Oh, well, okay, Cliff, because you said it, because they never saw me out of order. Okay, never saw me out of order. These guys today, 40, 50 years old, calling me pops and calling me aunt. Those are the highest accolades you can get to a street guy. They telling you, in other words, we love you. They ain't got no dad. They ain't got no uncle. I'm the uncle. I'm the dad. I'm the mella. The whole nine yards. And I need some more soldiers like that. Yeah, I need some more soldiers
right
like
now.
That. Yeah. Jesus,
all right,
Jesus
so
didn't have where was Jesus' church at? Where was his church? He didn't even have a home. He didn't have no place to live. These preachers got to come outside of these, outside of in the streets where these people are at, not inside an old church. Yeah, that's money grabbing. Come out here where the people need to hear you and hear the word. You know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off like that, but hey.
No, that's, you know what? I tell you, that's what this is for. You know, the platform for you to talk. It's quite all right. I agree with. In the essence of a grassroots campaign, and Jesus went amongst the people. Jesus
went
out
the people.
He wasn't sitting up in a $50 million building, you know, church,
he
whatever,
was
and having people.
You know, they asked Jesus, if you be who you say you are, why you be with the poor? His reply to them was, don't the doctor be with the sick? Where else should I be? Where else should I be but with the people that needs me? And that's so important. My ball players, my entertainers, the whole nine yards. Just like in the case of rap music. Rap music saved the record industry, the music industry. The music industry was out of here. Okay? The rap music came and saved that music industry. They asked Frank Sinatra. They said, well, Frank, why you don't sing no more? He said, because ain't no more songwriters. Ain't no more songwriters. Mm-hmm. They was out of business. These kids went in the basement and took an old record and started scratching on it and created a whole new industry. A whole new industry. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about behind the scenes. I asked them, which one would you rather to be? Dick Clark and James Brown or Aretha Franklin? Most of them would say, I want to be James Brown. Listen. If Dick Clark got Aretha Franklin on the show, B.B. King, James Brown, and Michael Jackson, if he's able to pay all them people, how much money is he making? Mm-hmm. How much money is he making? Man, don't always got to be the guy out front. Number two or number three is all right. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we got to inspire young people. I'm going to give another example. When the Rolling Stones came to America, they came to Shea Stadium. It was 54,000 people there. Okay? They ran up on the stage and they said, well, Mick, none of you in America, what's the first thing you want to do? You know what he told them? I want to meet
what?
Willie Dixon. I want to meet Willie Dixon. 54,000 people didn't even know who the hell Willie Dixon was. You know who Willie Dixon was?
I am looking him up right now. It's Willie Dixon.
Willie Dixon was one of the
forgive
most
prolific
songwriters.
Me.
He was a songwriter for Chess Records.
Oh, okay.
He was a songwriter
Dixon,
for
huh?
Chess
Where's
Records.
Where's he about? Out of North Carolina?
Beg your pardon?
Where's he from? Is he from North Carolina?
Yeah, where else black guy was from? He came here from the Blue Belt. Yeah. So you see what I'm saying? So it takes sometime a white person to get us our accolades. That's why I'm not having a real problem with these people marching in this protest that we got going on. And one of the reasons why the Beatles and the Stones, why they love blues so much, because over in England, that's all they could hear was the blues. That's all they knew was the blues. And I'm going to give you another example about black history. VJ Records, her name was Vivian Carter. She was the one that had the rights to the Beatles. She had the rights to them, taken away from them. Billy Taylor and the Vancouver, they had the rights to the Michael Jackson and Jackson 5. Donna Ross didn't discover them. I could go on and on. And when Michael was 8 years old, I used to take my suit coat off and put it on him and put a two bar stool together, let him sleep to show tag. He was 7, 8, 9 years old. And what he could do more than anything at that time was he could dance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Pierce. Can I ask you something?
Yes, ma'am.
What is it, and what would you like to see as far as like reparations and financial financing from the government from all these years and all these things that's happened to the African American community? How would you see reparations happen, and how would you like it to be?
What does that
look like to you?
They promised us 40 acres and a mule. Okay, and Dr. King said the United States has written a black man a check that has come back insufficient funds. Okay, and I do not want to see nobody giving any cash. Nobody giving any cash. You can get a discount on housing. You can get a discount on schooling. Your kids can go to school and go to secondary school at no cost, something like this. I'm not looking for a monetary, because those that got the money, they're going to end up with all the money again. No, I don't want to see no monetary given away. I want to see curves like the GI Bill was. It's all about vocational training. You know, we're moving in a technological world. I want to teach these kids technology. You know, give them a computer to work with. Right now they're assuming that everybody is on the Internet. No, they're not. No, they're not. It's a bunch of people not on the Internet. So my thing in reparations to me is giving the opportunity to start businesses, getting a discount on this, getting a discount. But actual cash money, I'm not for that at all, because I know nothing will be done with nothing proper.
But do you know the Indians and the Jews got theirs? You don't think
we
can handle it?
Well, if you remember, they call the Jews, one of the nicknames of the Jews were the money lenders. They're accustomed to having money. They're accustomed to managing money. That's what they do. And when we go back to the Indians, we're not going to talk about them at all, because they are a forgotten society. They are miseducated. A lot of them are alcoholic and drug addicted because of the fact that we constantly violated whatever treaties we gave to them. Matter of fact, there's going to be billions of dollars right now given to the Indian reservations that haven't been given to them. So they're not. That's not a good example at all. No, I'm looking for vocational training. I'm looking for housing. I'm looking for medication. This is how you can do reparations. You know, this high blood pressure that we have in our community, this diabetes that we have in our community, give these people access to our health care. Those are the things that I want to look for reparation. When you say reparations, the last thing I think about is giving them some money. But when it comes to housing, education, and health care, I'm all for reparations. Yes, I am.
Would you? What about land? Would that fall into something acceptable?
Well, even that could be thrown in the picture. But, you know, that's a whole nother story right there, too, when we're talking about land, you know, because some cities got what they call eminent domain, meaning that the city can come in and take your property if they feel like they need it for some particular situation. Then you got other farmers who have land, black farmers who have land that has not been given any kind of government welfare, any kind of subsidies to maintain their land and all of that. So all that comes on the plate. Oh, you know, the bottom line, human, you know, whatever the human calls for as reparation, whatever it takes to make a family whole, those are the things that I would talk about as far as reparations is concerned. And two of the things that I get back to more than anything is vocational training and health care. And let me tell you something.
Okay.
If a boy got a job, if an 18-year-old boy got a job, he's got to work 8 hours, he got to sleep 8 hours. And then if he's going to get in any kind of mischief, he ain't got but 8 hours to do it. And by him having a job, he having money, and by him sleeping, he ain't going to get in there no problem that quickly. So employment is very important for our young people. We got to start early. You got to start early. I started with a paper route when I was 10 years old. I had two paper routes. Yeah. I never waited on the mailman for me to have any money. No, you have to learn how to create your own money. This is America. Yeah. Somewhere there's a dollar that you can do and get it legally. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. The world is changing. But as it changes, more opportunities is coming available. Just think, a little while ago, we didn't have nothing called Uber. And now it's one of the largest businesses in the world. We didn't have Grubhub. So the world is changing. People's habits are changing. And you have to change with the time. You know, one last thing I want to talk about, too, is that when we talk about these young people, is that the number of young people that are missing. And I want to go all the way back to Wayne Williams in Atlanta. Wayne Williams, about 5'8". The last person he killed, I think, was like 6'2", 250 pounds. They say he strangled him and picked him up and threw him over the bridge. Who you talking to? All those black boys that were coming up missing, and when they was found, they had body parts missing, and they got Wayne Williams and convicted him of that. Okay? When you got an 18-year-old kid in Chicago, 18-year-old kid gets shot and killed in the streets of Chicago, when they do the autopsy on him, the law says that his vital organs are to be destroyed. Who do you think you're talking to? Okay? The law says unless the parents request his organs, they are to be destroyed. Now, you mean tell me you got an 18-year-old kidney, 18-year-old heart and liver, and you're going to throw it in the garbage? Who do you think you're talking to? So there's a big thing going on in body parts. So, you know, it's more than a notion when you start talking. It's more than a notion.
Well, I tell you,
this has
been very powerful, Cliff, Mr. Clifton, and I appreciate you logging on the show tonight. How can the listeners or people that are interested in hearing more about what you're doing or working with
you? Let me tell you what happened. 3 years ago, I had some major surgery, okay? And when I was in the hospital, and then when I went to the rehab center, my room stayed full. You could only have two people. It was so many people constant. I was in there for a month. It was so many people that when they came to the hospital knew right away they were coming to see me by the way they dressed and all this kind of stuff. And they just threw out the rules of two chairs. They started putting four and five chairs in my room because people was coming in like that on a constant basis for 30 days. But as I was in my room, I'm looking at the other people in the rehab center, and I was looking at how they would wheel them out there in the hallway, and they would sit there waiting on death. Nobody would ever come to see about them. Sometimes they would come in my room, and I would just let them come in my room just so they could interact with somebody. And I just say that when I get out of here, I'm going to see about creating me an organization to come around and visit these people. The doctor has done all he can do. The medicine has done all it can do. They need some company. I know the company got me well. My friends coming by, people coming by and talking to God, I'm praying for me, I'm going to be honest. But that's what got me well and got me up and out of there. And I'm just saying, those people are sitting there, nobody's coming to see about them. So I formed an organization called the National Betterment Association, NBA, National Betterment Association. And what I do and what I want to do is go to these senior citizen buildings, go to these nursing homes, and just sit and talk to the people. I don't want to take them out on no field trip. I don't want to teach them how to knit. I just want to talk about when they was in high school, first time they drank a bottle of wine, first time they kissed somebody. Those things, just some natural things that they want to talk about because all they want to do is some company. They want to have memories. Memories are very important. I have a lot of memories, and I know how well this is actually as a therapy for me, and I just want to go to visit these people and just sit down and talk with them and laugh and talk about the high school they went with and the dances they used to go to and the nightclubs they used to go to and the entertainers they saw. That's medicine. That's going to wake them up. And the next thing is that my organization is I want to deal with these children. It's real important. I want to deal with these children. When I was coming up, I went to Bible class. Every Thursday night, I went to Bible class. Now, I went for the hot dog and the Kool-Aid, but you couldn't get none if you couldn't quote nothing out the Bible. Okay? So I would like to start these things again. Block club. Be aware of what's going on in your block club. In Chicago, if there's a vacant lot on your block, you can buy it for a dollar. Y'all got these something to take, buy one of them vacant lots and start to your own garden on it. These things like this. The Bible said my people will perish for lack of knowledge. If you don't tell them, they don't know. So I just want to be able to say, hey, man, do this, hey, man, do that. So the name of my organization is the National Betterment Association. I just created it. Don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm trying to follow the guidelines, and I'm trying to get on more people to come on board and show me how to do this. They got that. Let me say this here, if I never talk to you again. It's going to be a lot of money out here in these streets of America. Get yourself and all the black people, get you some license, get you certified, and get some of this money that you're going to put out here. So it's going to be out here. It's a new world, and you just need to qualify, get your paperwork in order, and get some of these grants, especially now because these corporations, they looking for you. They looking for you harder than you looking for them. They want to make something better happen. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. Companies who have been shut down, they're going to come back automated, okay? A robot don't get pregnant. A robot don't get sick. A robot don't be late, okay? A lot of these companies have been looking at that. They have been looking at that while they're down, and they're going to replace these workers. Pretty soon we're going to have a robotic industrial. Okay, I don't want to get that deep, but I just want to let you know.
No, it's
I appreciate
okay. You know what? You can, because I appreciate you too. You know, artificial intelligence is something that it's here. It's here. I've seen videos
yes,
of robots and stuff doing backflips and walking and all types of stuff. So, yeah, artificial intelligence is a real it's a thing. It's real. You know, we will talk again, Mr. Clifton, and hopefully, you know, we will meet and we will work together in Chicago and abroad, and we'll be working alongside with your business and National Betterment Association in conjunction with the Nick Cannon Foundation, my foundation. You know, we're gonna make this happen, and I really appreciate you. I thank you for calling. You are welcome back on this show whenever, and you just enjoy your night. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, one thing I would like to say before I leave is that the Harold Washington election and this gentleman, Dr. Conrad Wirl, who died, that's a movie within itself. And if you got any connections in regards to that, that's a movie that will sell all over the world. So Chicago has a story that that people want to hear about. Okay, good night, and thank you very much.
Okay. Good night. Thank you.
All right.
What's up? This is your boy, Core DJ Hershey. He in the ATL. And you know what? Who else got that finesse out there? The one and only Candace and Shelly.
What's up, it's your boy Corey DJ Hershey. He in the ATL. And you know what? Who else got that finesse out there? The one and only Candace and Shelly.